Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, something a little bit different. You know, in the last few months, we've been so in the weeds every week on the developments and the California recall. And this week, we have a bigger conversation with one of the most important history makers in modern California history. We're talking with Dolores Huerta, who, of course, along with Cesar Chavez, formed the United Farm Workers. And was at the center of so much political change in this state, expanding rights for farm workers, expanding rights for union members, expanding rights for many of the most vulnerable in this state. She's been a progressive activist for seven decades at this point. She's 91 years old, was just involved in the recall election campaigning with the governor just a few weeks ago. Just had a school named after her in Burbank, one of many different schools that are named after her. So the conversation, you get a chance to basically talk to a history book, get in depth on what it was like with Cesar Chavez. What was it like being there on the night that Robert Kennedy was killed? What was it like when Barack Obama stole her phrase, si se puede, yes we can, and used it to win the presidency and then gave her a Presidential Medal of Freedom? We talk about the past, present, and future, and a lot about activism and getting people involved. It is one of the more remarkable conversations we've had. I learned a lot. I think it's important for people to hear, especially young people, and I hope you'll listen. Here it is, Dolores Huerta. Dolores Huerta, welcome to The Issue Is for the very first time. It is an honor to have you with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Of all those things, I don't know what is most impressive. I mean, each one of them is so extraordinary in their own. And we should also point out, which is also extraordinary, you're 91 years young.
Yes, I am.
which is an amazing testament to such a life well lived. Well, we want to talk about your background and your decades of activism, but let's begin in the current moment, your activism now. You were real involved in helping Governor Newsom fight the recall. Here, both of you are in the final days of the campaign.
Governor, you know we love you, okay? You know we love you. Thank you very much. Governor Gavin Newsom.
It's as good as it gets for me, guys. You cannot take Dolores Huerta for granted. I mean, I know she's your own Dolores Huerta, but it's a treasure, and we talk about legends. This is a living legend.
What did that mean to you to hear that, and what do you make of the recall results?
Well, it really shows that people in California, unlike the rest of some parts of our country, that they really they stand up for the things that the governor has done, you know, being able to get stimulus checks for undocumented people. He recently signed a bill that people over 50 years of age that are undocumented will be able to get covered by our California health coverage bill, our Medi-Cal. This is so important because we know that if we want to be protected, all of us have to be protected. He's out there in front of everybody in terms of the global warming, that we've got to realize that the climate change is a reality, and that we have all of these forest fires and people are suffering from the drought. You know, if our farm workers are out there having to try to pick food every day out there, not only in the hot sun, but also having to work while they're masked and then trying to breathe when we have all of the smoke that is coming from the forest fires. He and Jerry Brown really supported a lot of these initiatives so we could get more money into our educational system. So he is a very progressive person, and he's standing up for the values that people in California have, which is getting more support and more resources, especially for our low-income communities, for our communities of color. And also being out there in front in terms of trying to contain and control the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah, which has so disproportionately affected the Latino community as well. Let's go back now. You began your activism in the middle part of the 20th century. When did you first realize what injustice was and the importance of speaking out about it?
Well, as a woman of color, you face that injustice growing up. You have it on the streets when police stop to harass you. You have it in the school system where the teachers were not very supportive and they look down and make life difficult for you. And so you fight this racial discrimination growing up, and it really hurts you. But at the same time, you want to do something about changing it. And we know that all of this comes back from slavery. You know, the indigenous people of our North American and South American continent were the first slaves before they bought slaves from Africa. And we're still trying to get over that, the legacy of slavery, which is domination and racial discrimination, you know, even discrimination against women, discrimination against children. It all stems from our legacy that we have of slavery.
Yeah, and you met Cesar Chavez, and then the two of you would become such important labor leaders together. How did he change your life, and what's the sort of the most important lesson you learned from him?
Well, Cesar was a genius. He was very, very smart. He never had a chance to go to high school or college, but he was very, very committed to work for farm workers. He always had a book under his arm, and he believed in poor people. He believed that if given the proper opportunities, they could become anything. In fact, in the United Farm Workers, we had several apprenticeship programs, and one of them was for attorneys. And several young people became attorneys with our apprenticeship program that we had. One of them was a farm worker, and now he's a judge here in Kern County, Marcos Camacho. But he really believed in poor people and the fact that they were intelligent, that they could make a difference, and that they had the power to make the changes for themselves. But our mentor, the person that taught both Cesar and myself how to organize, was a man named Fred Ross. And he was from Los Angeles. He had been a teacher at USC. And then he left teaching to become an organizer also, and then taught us the lessons that we needed to learn on how to organize the grassroots community so that they could change the situations that they were in, teaching them that, you know what, you've got the power to make the changes, and you just can't sit back and wait for somebody to do it for you. You have got to do it for yourselves.
And part of the way you did that was with a strike over grapes, which kind of changed the power dynamic here in California. Talk to us a moment about that.
Well, the situation of farm workers was really desperate. They were earning like 70 cents an hour. They didn't have unemployment insurance when they finished working. Ronald Reagan vetoed unemployment insurance for farm workers three sessions in a row. They didn't have cold drinking water. They didn't have bathrooms in the field. You can imagine what that was like for women. Not even giving the farm workers a toilet when they're miles and miles away from the nearest town, the nearest gas station. And these are the situation, and then being discriminated, working from sunup to sundown. So this is the situation that farm workers were in. And thank goodness that we did learn how to organize, and we were able to organize the workers to stand up for themselves.
And that resulted in a lot of changes in terms of legislation as well. And one of the rallying cries of your organization was "Si se puede," this phrase that you hear at every single California event since. It's actually your phrase. What's the backstory?
Well, Cesar was doing a fast in Arizona, a water-only 25-day fast, because the governor had signed a law that if farm workers went on strike, they could go to prison. If you said boycott anything, you could go to prison. And so Cesar did this fast in Arizona to protest against that law, which was finally overturned, by the way, by this Arizona Supreme Court. But many of the professional people there in Arizona would say to me, "Oh, Dolores, here in Arizona, you can't do any of that. In California, you people can do a lot of great things, but here in Arizona, no se puede, no, you can't." And so my response to them was, "Yes, you can in Arizona, si se puede in Arizona." And that was born in 1972, that slogan.
Do you think that some of the work that you did helped humanize people? Do you think that in some ways, some of the farm workers were not even thought of as full human beings in the way that you talked about slaves?
Well, that's true. I think when people sit down at their dinner table every night, they don't think about the people that are out there in the hot sun, you know, every single day. Even during the pandemic, they were out there every day picking the food, the fruits and the vegetables, and the people that work in the packing sheds, you know, the meat slaughterhouses, all those people out there that are working hard to put the food on our table, and we don't think about them. And I think that, again, is the legacy of slavery that we have in our country, that the people that they do the essential work. And it's not just farm workers, it's the custodians, the people that clean our buildings, the people that build our buildings. And, you know, we really don't honor them or respect them the way that we should. We kind of tend to respect people that are millionaires and billionaires and people that have a higher education, but we don't think of the people that are out there doing the manual labor every single day to keep our country safe, clean, and fed.
Yeah, literally the essential workers of our country. For a moment, though, on Si Se Puede, you know, we all know this so well here in California. We hear it all the time. There was this incident where the First Lady of the United States, Jill Biden, came to visit us, and she tried to say it, and it didn't go all that well. Here's a look.
So say it with me. Si Se Puede.
She was doing the best she could, and credit for coming out here. But what went through your mind when you heard that?
Well, I would say I would give her an E for effort. It was really nice of her to do that. And the people that were in the audience were very appreciative of the fact that she, number one, that she came out there to a big vaccination clinic that the United Farm Workers hosted, and that she had the grace to say our slogan with us.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
Exactly. Well, up next, we're going to have more with Dolores Huerta. We'll talk about her being on stage with RFK on the night of his assassination, her receiving the Presidential Medal of Freedom from President Barack Obama, who used her phrase.
And Dolores Huerta, who is an old friend of mine and who has worked with the union, to thank her and tell her how much I appreciate her coming tonight.
That was Robert F. Kennedy talking about Dolores Huerta at the Ambassador Hotel on the night that he was assassinated. Dolores Huerta is back with us. That is one of the many moments where you were right at the center of history. Can you talk to us a bit about RFK and what that night was like?
Well, Senator Kennedy was a big supporter of the Farm Workers Union. He would come out and do fundraisers for us. He helped us raise money so we could get a clinic in Delano for the farm workers, because the local doctors really did not take care of the farm workers and did not give them the good kind of medical attention that they needed. So he was just such a big friend. And then, of course, when we lost him, it was a very tragic circumstance for all of us, because when you had somebody that was as powerful and as caring, you know, the one thing about Robert Kennedy, I like to say this about not only him, but Ted Kennedy also, and the Kennedy family, Kerry Kennedy, and all of his children that continue the legacy of doing good works and helping people that need help, and that they always bring you in through the front door, not the back door. That's the way that the senator was. He didn't say, I know what's good for you. He would say, how can I help you? What do you need?
I can't even imagine what it must have been like, though, to be there that night.
Well, it was horrible. It was terrible. It was like, and it was a setback for the entire country, not only for the farm workers and the labor movement, but the entire country, our country, is, I think, still suffering from his loss. From having that loss, having him taken away from us the way that he was killed.
And he's in the news once again now. Sirhan Sirhan, his killer, is potentially up for parole. This mm-hmm. could end up going to Governor Newsom to make a decision on whether to grant parole or not. You're close with the governor. What would your advice to the governor be?
Well, I don't think it's my place to make that kind of a proposal to the governor. I think it's up to the family. I know that the family is kind of divided. But actually, one of the board members of my foundation, Paul Schrade, who was there with the senator that night and was actually one of the people that got a bullet, he says that Sirhan Sirhan did not kill the senator, that there was another shooter, and they've done a lot of forensic evidence on this, because the senator was actually... the bullet that killed him came from the back, not from the front. Sirhan Sirhan. And when Sirhan made that first shot, one of the people that was there hit his hand and the bullet scattered all over.
Hmm.
So actually, like I said before, there was evidence that there may have been a second shooter the night that the senator was killed. So there is some doubt about whether Sirhan is actually the one that killed Senator Kennedy. But again, like I say, it's not my place in terms of what the governor is going to do. I think that is up to the family.
Well, you yourself were attacked back in September 1988 in San Francisco. A police officer attacked you. We've got a picture of Cesar Chavez visiting you in the hospital. How did that moment change your perspective?
Well, as you know, I have been arrested many, many times during my work with the farm worker movement and with other organizations, with Unite Here, the Hotel Workers Union, with the LGBT community. I was arrested in San Francisco when they were trying to get medications that they needed to fight the AIDS epidemic. And so, but to get beaten that way was pretty awful, I might say. But I was not the only one that was beaten. There were other people that were beaten up that day. And by the way, if you see the film Dolores, which is on Amazon, that it shows that whole incident where the police just came in and started beating up people that were doing a peaceful protest against George Walker Bush. And the George Walker Bush was running for the presidency. And Caesar had just finished another fast, a 36-day water-only fast against pesticides, because these are the economic poisons that are on our food. Many farm workers and their children have gotten cancer. Many have died from these pesticides. And so this is why Caesar was doing that fast. And the then candidate, George Walker Bush, had a press conference in Fresno that said, oh, there's nothing wrong with pesticides. The government is taking care of you. So he was speaking at the St. Francis Hotel in San Francisco. And so I went up there and we had our big boycott grapes banner. And to be able to say to the candidate Bush there, pesticides are harmful. They hurt people. They kill people. And this is why Caesar was doing his fast. And it was during that demonstration that I got beaten by the police.
And this is George Herbert Walker Bush, who was the vice president at the time running to be the next president. He ended up winning that race. Was there any part of you after that beating that said, got to pull back a little bit, maybe this isn't worth it?
Oh, no. No, no. I mean, the mission of an organizer is to go out there and get people to become activists, to get them to get involved, get them to get out there to vote, because we know that if people engage politically, that this is the way that we make our voices heard. This is the way that we can change laws by getting good people, good progressives elected to office. And then we can, you know, we meet our goals about ending racism, sexism, you know, homophobia, all of these climate change deniers, you know. We have to go out there and educate people, inform people, so that we can really get our country to really have that ideal of democracy, and that life will be equal for everyone, that we don't have to have this imbalance that racism brings us, or the income inequality that we have, education inequality that we have, where our Black and brown children are not getting the kind of an education that they deserve. Our teachers are not being paid enough money. They don't have enough support systems. And so we have a lot of work to do to set our ship, the United States ship, with to set it right. And the only way that we can do that is if people get engaged, if people become active, and people vote. And that this is a way that we can create the ideal dream that our country is, the American dream, to make a democracy and to make life equal and better for everyone, not just the wealthy few, but also the working class people, the people that do the hard work to keep our country going.
You were awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the nation's highest honor, by President Barack Obama. And to think about where you started and all of the discrimination you faced, to then be at the White House, having our country's first African-American president, a community organizer himself, presenting you with that medal. What was that moment like?
Well, that was a very humbling moment, because I know I received that medal on the backs of farmworker martyrs. We had five people that were killed during the farmworker movement just to get the basic human rights for farmworkers. We had hundreds that were beaten, that went to jail to get their basic human rights, people who lost their homes. So it was on the backs of all of those people that I received that medal. And of course, I was very grateful, very honored, but also very humbled.
And on that day, the president admitted that his iconic phrase, "Yes, we can," really came from your iconic phrase. Take a look at this moment.
And on a personal note, Dolores was very gracious when I told her I had stolen her slogan, "Si se puede," yes, we can. Knowing her, I'm pleased that she let me off easy, because Dolores does not play.
I love the look at your face there. He's right, though, right?
All right, yeah. When I met the president, he said, "You know, I stole your slogan." I told him, "Yes, you did."
Well, it seems to work out pretty well for both of you. When we come back, Dolores Huerta is going to talk about activism today.
Every citizen has power, but in order to achieve the peace that we all yearn for, that we've all got to get involved. So, what do we say? Can we do it? We say, yes, we can. And in Spanish, we say, sí se puede.
Dolores Huerta talking about activism on the TED Talk stage. Dolores is back with us. You have been fighting for decades for workers' rights, immigration reform, reproductive freedom, voting rights. All of those issues are back in the news right now. And I'm wondering, what is your advice to the next generation of activists?
Well, first of all, I want to thank them for all the people that have been marching and protesting, whether it's the Me Too movement, the young people that are marching against gun violence, and of course, immigrant rights, and everything that's been happening right now. But just to remind them that whatever we're fighting for, it's got to be put into a law that can be implemented, that can be enforced, and where people can be held accountable. So sometimes we think, well, I already marched, I protested, and that's all that I have to do. No, we've got to go out there and elect progressive people to our local school board, our city council, our state legislature, and of course our Congress, because what we want to happen, yes, we need to have universal health care. Yes, we need to have pre-college education. We are the richest country in the world. But the only way that we can get that is that we're the ones that have to go out there and advocate for it and fight for it and elect people to our legislature and our Congress that are going to get that for us, for the people that need education, people that need resources. We can make it happen, but we're the ones that have to go out there and do it.
You know, during that TED Talk, you talked a lot about apathy and how that is one of the great evils out there right now. How do you cure apathy, though, especially for a lot of folks, especially lower income people who feel like the system is not working for them and that they don't have a voice in it? How do you get through to people that have kind of thrown up their hands?
Well, I think we can give them the examples of the farm workers, you know, who are the poorest and of all and discriminated, and yet they were able to make changes and win what we fought for, that unemployment insurance, the right to have a union, et cetera. But they had to go out there and do it. And we can give them that example. And even before we had the Farm Workers Union, Cesar Chavez and I belonged to another organization called the Community Service Organization, which started in Los Angeles, by the way. And they got the first Latino elected to city council, Edroy Ball. And we passed all kinds of bills. We passed a bill to have driver's licenses in Spanish, ballots in the Spanish language so people could vote in Spanish. The fact that you could get public assistance if you were a legal immigrant to the United States. And these are very important measures, the Amnesty Bill of 1986, you know, and these are bills that we passed because we got people involved and had them contact their legislators to make it happen. And so people just, once they understand that they can make a difference. And, you know, you mentioned Robert Kennedy. Just before Senator Kennedy was killed, his last words were, "We have obligations and responsibilities to our fellow citizens. We have obligations and responsibilities to our fellow citizens." So if all of us can take that to heart, because the changes that we need to see, it's not only for our families or our community, but it's really for our country and for the world, because the United States of America is the most powerful country in the world, the richest and the most powerful country in the world. So what we do influences other people. And I do want to mention, though, because we're talking about Hispanic Heritage Month, I love to say to people, Google a map of the United States before 1848. What you see there will surprise you, because a third of the United States was Mexico. Mm. So when they say to us, Mexican Americans, go back where you came from, we'd say, hey, we were here before the United States was the United States of America, okay? Mm. And all of the indigenous people of the South American and the North American continent, the indigenous people, they are the natives of this land. The first immigrants that came to this country were the immigrants from Europe, like part of my great-grandfathers, okay? They were the true immigrants that came here to this country. And we need to do that because we've got to fight the racism and the, you know, the xenophobia that exists in our country. We cannot let that rule or govern the way that we think or the way that we act. So, again, we want to create a society that is just and fair. And we have to, again, understand that we are the only ones that can do that, but we've got to become active, we've got to be informed, we've got to vote, and that's the way that we make it happen. Yeah. And by the way, also, we've got to change the curriculums in our educational system. Like in California, you know, ethnic studies is now going to be mandatory in high school, but we have to bring that down to pre-K level, pre-kindergarten, because children are not born racist or homophobic, you know, or sexist. They are taught this by the cultures or the families that they grow up in. But this is our moment of awakening in the United States. It's a moment of reckoning in the United States. And I think we are all feeling that what is happening right now is very, very vital, very alive. And we all want to be part of what's going on right now, to know that we had a hand in making the changes that need to be made.
And of course, you are already and will increasingly be an important part of our textbooks for young people for generations as well, which is quite an extraordinary thing. Up next, Dolores is going to be here for one last segment to play our personal issues game, our name game, plus a talk about her legacy.
We don't use the word icon. We use the word ICAN. ICAN.
Scenes from the dedication of Dolores Huerta Plaza in Boyle Heights, one of the many places around California. Named for our guest, the iconic civil rights leader, Dolores Huerta. Welcome back to The Issue Is, Dolores. We like to play games on our show, so this next game is called the name game. This is where we say a name, and you say the first word that comes to mind. Okay, you ready? Mm-hmm. All right. Cesar Chavez.
Honor, bravery, courage, leader.
Robert F. Kennedy.
Our martyr, someone who could have saved us and really taken our country forward, somebody who cared about the poor and the oppressed.
Barack Obama.
Our first African-American president, a great leader. That I was so fortunate to know him and meet him and Michelle and the family.
Donald Trump.
An uneducated person that needs a lot of help.
Gavin Newsom.
Our governor who has won his recall and is a great fighter against global warming. And who I believe is going to lead not only our state, but also our country into making more and better progress.
And maybe be president one day. Who knows, right?
Who knows? Yeah. He might be.
Let's play personal issues. This is where we put 30 seconds on the clock, and you give us rapid-fire answers, okay? Here we go. This is where we have some fun, get to know you a little bit better. What is your favorite TV show?
I think Rachel Maddow.
What's your favorite book?
Larry O'Donnell and Rachel Maddow. That's
okay. What's your favorite book?
Oh, my goodness. I have so many books that I read. I'm currently reading How to Be an Anti-Racist. I think that sometimes we think that we know a lot, but we really don't.
What's your favorite band or musical artist?
Carlos Santana,
who's a part of your 90th birthday celebration as well. And, you know, so many people count you as their role model. Who is your role model?
Oh, my goodness. I have so many. I think my mother, for one, my Girl Scout leader, Catherine Kemp, may they rest in peace. Hillary Clinton, of course. Karen Bass, who I really look up to a lot. Hilda Solis, a supervisor in Los Angeles County, a very strong leader and a very humble person. People don't even know how much she's done.
Do you want Karen Bass to run for mayor of Los Angeles?
Absolutely. Yes, I think she'll make a great mayor.
You are a mother of 11. How do you pull that off?
Well, you have to ask for help, because I think a lot of times we as women think that we have the sole responsibility to raise our children. But we know women are needed in civic life, and so we need women to also get involved, to get them to run for office, because we need the feminist voice, the feminist intellect out there as leaders. As Coretta Scott King said, we will never have peace in the world until women take power. So we have to do everything that we can to get as many feminists, and I'm going to use the word feminist, those that believe in women's rights, elected to office. But hopefully we will come to the day where we have every single board everywhere that is making a decision, will have 50% of the people at the table that will be feminists. Because like I like to say, if you don't have 50% of those people that are making the decisions, they're going to make the wrong decision, okay?
And you've also pointed out in the past that feminist isn't just women, that men can be feminist as well, as long as they're in favor of women's rights.
Absolutely.
And you know, you have such a living legacy. Just recently in Burbank, middle school was renamed for you instead of a eugenist, which is such a fitting thing. There's so many different places that are named for you, but if you had to sort of succinctly sum it up, how would you describe your legacy?
Well, I hope it is one of being an organizer, of being out there and getting people to get rid of their apathy, for people to become activists, to take responsibility, and not only for their lives, but for their communities and for our country. Because we know we can't have a democracy unless people engage. Because if people are not engaging, then you don't have a democracy. And I like to quote of this great Spanish philosopher, José Ortega y Gasset, who was the philosopher in Spain before Franco took power, the dictator Franco. And he said, if you do not have an educated citizenry, then the powerful, the greedy, and the corrupt will govern. Mm-hmm. And so that is why it is so important for all of us to take our citizenship and our residency, that we take it seriously. And when we talk about democracy for the people, that's us. We are the people, but if we are not informed, if we do not engage, then we do not have and will not have a true democracy, especially now that our democracy is being challenged on so many different fronts.
Well, that is literally the purpose of this show, is to educate the citizenry. That is my personal life mission. And I am so, so honored to be able to spend this time with you, to learn from you. Thank you for representing the little guy and giving more people a shot. It really means so much to be able to learn from you. Thank you so much for coming on The Issue Is.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm really appreciative. Thank you.
That's all for this week. Before we go, can you give us a Si Se Puede?
Absolutely. And just one thing, too. You know, I always like to end my chance by saying to everybody out there, who's got the power? And you've got to say, we've got the power. What kind of power? People power. Are we going to go out there? Are we going to engage? Are we going to vote? What do we say? Si se puede.
Si,
yes,
se,
we can.
Si se puede. Si se puede. Si se puede. Dolores Huerta, yes, we can. Si se puede. Thanks for watching, everybody.
Our thanks to Dolores Huerta. Yes, we can. Next week, a very different kind of show. Gloria Allred is going to be back in our studio along with Dave Rubin. So that will have some fireworks. It's going to be a lot of fun. Thanks for listening. Hope you'll share out this podcast. Let people know about it. Give us a review and connect with me on social media at Alex Michelson. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Have a great week.